I was trying to talk to you and you didn't have your headphones in.
I told you.
I know, but then I forgot. And like you said my name.
I did.
So yeah, you were like, you said,
I was probably yelling about Tucker, telling you to find him a new home. Go
yeah,
away.
something like that. Yeah, something like that. And I was like talking and I looked up and I'm like, you're not even listening.
How
And I was like, why talk
dare
to
I?
me? Yeah, why talk to me if you're not gonna listen?
So I take it you can hear me then.
Yeah. Are you ready to like listen to my talking?
Yeah, I'm ready to listen to your talking.
Cute hair.
Thanks.
Wow. You know what though?
What?
You clean up nice.
I was gonna say, remember me 20 minutes ago on Marco Polo when I was like looking disheveled?
You did. I was like, I mean, whatever. Like, if you show up looking bald, I don't care.
You were like,
But like, yeah. And wow, you look totally different. Good job.
I straightened half my hair and then straightened just the surroundings of where
Yeah.
the not straight stuff is and then put it up in a thing.
Looks good.
But I do have leggings and flip flops on.
Oh,
So
and cute outfit, cute
it's just
overlay.
my top half has figured it out, but that's all that anyone can see anyway.
Yeah, it looks good.
So how's it going
Anyway.
now that you like have been working at your job for a while? How's it going?
Oh, guys, it's okay. So since we talked last, it's been one goofy ride. You know, everywhere you go, there's gonna be people. I just really put monkey wrenches into what you're trying to do. And you're like, can we just show up and all get along and just like play fair, play nice, and just do our work?
Right.
But no, but it got figured out. There was a whole week of drama. I cried at work in the bathroom, and she was just so mean and awful. I talked to the owners, I talked to management, it all got figured out. And back in the
You
office as
actually
the
have your
manager,
promotion. Yeah.
I actually have it now, doing my thing. It's all good, but I'm still kind of like hesitant still to like call it a promotion because I'm like, what the hell am I doing? I still don't really even know half of what I'm doing. Like I have a job description now, but also
Oh,
like they still haven't given me logins.
they're
So
the
it's
most
like,
disorganized group of
guys, I know.
silly gooses.
So yeah, I'm just taking it day by day.
Yeah,
Just, you know.
that's the best you can do, really.
Yeah, that's it. Although I planted some succulents today and I put those around the office, and that was kind
Oh,
of a fun
nice.
thing.
You know that purple plant you gave me?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I killed
Oh.
it.
Well, that's
But
okay. I mean,
like
I'm not
it's
upset. I'm just
fine.
disappointed.
I know. Well, it's like some of the shut your face, Tucker. I can't with him. Anyways, can you hear him like super
Yeah.
well?
He's getting so tall.
Yeah, he's taller than Cooper for sure. Okay.
Wow.
Now that he's shut up for a second. Oh,
How are you?
I am fine.
Any fun vacations planned?
Yes. I think I might have talked about this, but maybe I didn't. We're going to Hawaii in November.
You are?
Yeah.
You didn't say anything about that.
Oh, so Josh, with his work, he like stays at Hilton's a lot, so he has kind of like a like reward system that he's just been basically using 'cause, you know, he goes and works and stays in those places. Anyway, so he got this deal at one of the Hiltons we stayed at for in California, and they're like, okay, with your rewards you get like this super cheap vacation to wherever you want. But the deal is we have to go listen to like it's kind of like a timeshare thing, so we have to go like listen to their spiel. And
Gotcha.
so we get if for $900 we got a 7-day trip to Hawaii, and
Wow.
we have to what's the word? I lost my train of thought. Oh, we have to go to one of those timeshare meetings for like 2 hours or whatever, and that's
Yeah.
it. So all we got to do is just like hold, stand our ground that we do
Yep.
not sign up for a timeshare.
Say, oh, sorry, my hands actually can't sign papers today.
Oh,
They're broken.
they hurt really bad.
Yeah,
They were
yeah, yeah.
damaged
By a
mid-flight.
jellyfish? Right. I stuck my hand in a jar full of jellyfish.
Yeah.
You walk in with jelly on your fingers. Sorry.
I don't know what happened, but I got stung by a jellyfish and now I have jelly all over me.
You're like, just be so weird that they excuse you before the 2 hours is up.
Yeah, they're like, what kind of freak?
Anyway, so, like, you're making our staff uncomfortable. Please leave. Yeah, we don't want you to sign any of our papers.
Like, so sticky and covered in jelly. Papers. You're like, oh, you want me to sign this? Oh, I'm sorry. I made a mess.
Okay.
Welcome to episode 45.
45! That is so exciting.
It really is pretty cool that we've made it this far. Obviously, we do have more than 45 episodes, but it just seems shocking that we're like, remember when we only had like 7 and we were like watching the analytics like constantly? Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, we have 100 people that have listened to our podcast.
Yeah. I remember when we got to 20, we were like, oh my gosh, like we have so many episodes. Then we got to 30 and we're like, oh my gosh, we have so many episodes. So we get to 40 and now we're at 45. It's like,
I know. It just is so cool. Tucker, ow, you little shit. Go away. Sorry.
We just keep chugging along.
No, sorry. I can't hear you. He pulled my headphones out of my ears. No.
Typical.
Tucker, no. I will put you in your kennel. Go away. No.
He's like one of those like arm things that like go, that like grab, you know, like
he's like one of those, what are ow, stop, he's one of those like you imagine the grabby things but the end of it is like a alligator
like razor blades. Yeah,
stop it. I will fight you forever. Go away. Sit, lay down. No, lay down, lay. Good boy.
You were so good. You would never do such a naughty thing.
Anyway, 45 episodes.
Anyway, good job. Yeah, good job for us.
Yeah, we're killing it. I mean, like, we're barely, like, chugging along, but we are making it.
Yeah.
Do you want me to start?
Any other news? Updates?
Oh, we have a new Patreon.
That's what Patreon. I was gonna say.
Yeah.
Patreon member. Yeah. Who is this?
Trisha. Welcome. Thank you for supporting us.
She's a top tier supporter.
Yes.
By the way.
Yeah. What an honor it is to have people like actually want to support us in that way. Super awesome. So I hope she enjoys the video content, the extra content, the, you know, all the goods.
Yeah.
And her little package. I hope she likes her package.
Nice. Yeah.
Her welcomeness. But.
And any of the other Patreon members, if you want to show off your merch that you got or like anything that you got in your package, definitely show us on Instagram or Facebook. Just add us in your story or post. We'd like to see it.
But yeah, welcome, Trisha. And I think that's all our updates, right?
Mm-hmm. Cool. Pretty sure.
Okay, well then I will get going on my story. Trigger warning for those who may want to stop listening now. Sexual assault and rape. So let that be a fair warning to anybody who may have sensitivities to those stories. But
understood.
Let's get on to it. Okay. So May 1992, 11-year-old Nicole Iyer, was asleep on the floor in the living room. You know how you just fall asleep on the couch? She said she got really hot, so she went she went down to the floor to kind of cool off while she watched TV and fell back asleep. She was in an apartment in Riverdale, Utah, where she lived with her parents, when an intruder entered the home through a sliding glass door. One of her parents, so this man approached her and she saw this black figure kind of in her living room, and he told her to turn over. And before she could, one of her parents turned on the kitchen light And the man told her not to scream or do anything as he held the knife to her throat. She said he could hear, she said she could hear a cupboard being opened, a refrigerator, the fridge being opened, some liquid being poured out. And then she said, quote, I was trying to send a silent plea. Please check around the corner. And at the same time, do not check around the corner. The blade was so smooth against my neck. I didn't know what would happen if the person did check up on me. The light went back off and we heard the door shut. And the man spoke again, wanting to know how many people there were in the house.
Oh my gosh, what a nightmare.
I know. This is like, yeah, I've had a whole new series of like, oh shit, things about like, are my windows closed and locked? Are my, you know, doors closed and locked always? After researching this story.
Well, and also just like, I mean, she said, like, she had like that silent plea of like, I want you to look around the corner, but also like, I don't want you to, because what's going to happen?
Right.
You
Is
know,
he going to kill
like,
them or kill me? Yeah.
Right. But also what's going to happen if they don't look around the corner?
Right.
Like, no matter what.
It's bad.
That's so
I know.
Scary.
It's so scary. And she's 11. So keep that in
11.
Mind. 11 years old.
Wow.
The man put duct tape on her eyes and took her out to the parking lot to his car. He began to drive out of the parking lot and forced her to hide on the floor of the car. He pulled into a park and ride lot for buses. So like where you park and then ride the bus. The man raped her and then just drove her home and let her go. He said,
oh my
if
gosh.
She watched him leave, he said, wait for 10 seconds. If you watch me leave or call the police, I'll return and I will kill you, is what he told her.
Oh
so of
my
course
gosh.
She like told police, or like she told her parents, she told police. For the following 3 years of Nicole's adolescent life, she had to be routinely tested for HIV. Nicole said in 1992 AIDS was killing 90% of the people who had it, and there was a day in particular where my doctor left me a message and I thought the test had come back positive. I was 13 at the time. She also said that she had to go through several surgeries to heal from her brutal sexual assault.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
I know. And then on May 22nd, 2001, Clearfield police received a 911 call about another rape victim. She was asleep in bed with her husband when an intruder woke her up and forced her to wake her husband up and then tie and bind him. The intruder asked if there was anyone else in the home, and she told him that her daughter and her brother were also in the house. So the man went through the house and gathered up all the others in the family and tied them up as well. He began to rape the mother and forced everyone to watch.
Oh my gosh.
I know. He also sexually assaulted the daughter and forced everyone to watch.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. During one of the assaults, the door began to open and the son of the original victim, so the woman, her son returned home from work and the intruder quickly put a gun to his face and bound him as well. He then forced the son to watch the sexual assaults on his family again, mostly towards the mother and sister.
Oh my gosh.
As he was leaving, he just simply asked for money, and the uncle, so the original victim's brother, had $100. And so he had someone go get the money and then just kissed the mom on the mouth like it was so casual and then walked out.
Ew.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
The family called 911 and the police searched the area, gathered evidence from the crime scene and collected rape kits from the victims. And luckily, they got more DNA from those victims. So they... In this, I'll tell you, I got a lot of information from Bloodline Detectives. It's a show on Peacock. This specific episode is season 1, episode 14. But they interviewed some of the detectives and they were like, this was the nicest family. Like, the dad was a preacher and I don't know how anyone would target them. And then he said, we felt guilty for them going through such a traumatic experience and having to watch everyone experience that and then have to put them through a rape kit, but which is another like violation of their privacy, and like they just went through this thing and now they have more people touching them, you know. And they're like, well, we, you know, if we want to catch this guy, we have to, but we felt so bad asking them to do that.
Oh, I know. Awful.
Let's see. So they got DNA from these victims, right? These two. And they also got DNA from, but mind you, this was the first victim, the 11-year-old, she was in Riverdale, Utah. And these other victims were in Clearfield, Utah.
Where's Riverdale?
That is North Morgan, Riverdale. It's, I think it's north of Morgan.
Okay, okay. Clearfield is south Clearfield. Of Ogden, right?
Yes, and I think Riverdale is north of Ogden.
Okay.
So these guys, like these police departments aren't really talking to each other because it's in the 90s, right? Well, one was in 92 and one was in 2002. So I don't think they were thinking they were connected at the time.
Wow.
And
10
so,
years apart, exactly.
Right. So the brother, the son, was able to... The brother was able to tell police a quick description of this man that attacked his family. And... He said, because almost immediately after he saw the man, he had a gun pointed at him. And he said, I have to admit, like, I was focused on the gun for a lot of the time, but he was able to give them a quick description in which they could do a sketch. So this is what the sketch looked like.
Wow.
Okay.
Those eyes.
I know. So... But, I mean, he was described as a white male. Okay, hold on. A white male.
A white male with a thumb head.
Yeah. He was about 6'10 to 6", or, sorry, 5'10 to 6 foot, slender, and light colored hair. So, that's, but in Utah, it's like, okay, a white guy, but that's like, finding a needle in a haystack kind of thing, you know, because yeah, they were like, thank you for this, but you know, they didn't have much to go on to find this guy, but they combed the area, they took DNA, which at the time wasn't a huge science yet, but the I think it was the prosecutor was like, I knew that science was going to catch up to this evidence. And so
smart.
I know, I was like, gosh, if only all freaking police and detectives and investigators were like this.
Like thought ahead like that.
Yeah, let's get everything, no matter what it is, just so, you know, they got the bed sheets. They got anything that they knew that the guy touched. Like, they got everything they could, you know, to hopefully find this guy. So law enforcement began to believe that they had a serial rapist on their hands. This attacker was named the Clearfield Rapist. Before they named him the Clearfield Rapist, another thing happened. So in May 2002, 1 year later, the police were alerted that the DNA from the family attack that happened in the previous year matched another attack in July of that same year. So just a couple months before the family was attacked, there was another assault. This woman was, let's see, this woman woke up to a man straddling her in her bed. The man ripped her clothes off and used it to blindfold her and bind her.
Oh my gosh.
As he sexually assaulted her. He had, when he left, she had to unbind herself, so she had to get loose, and then she called 911 and locked all her doors. She also provided a rape kit. The police gathered evidence from her home and contained the attacker's DNA. So they have DNA from not only the family's attack, but also from this woman's attack, and they were able to link them together.
Wow.
But there was no DNA that matched it in the CODIS system, right? Which the FBI CODIS system, like, they if they're arrested for a reason that they would need to obtain DNA, then they would catch him. Or they would find him. But if he, like, let's say he doesn't do a, or he does a crime that doesn't need the DNA to be collected, then that he could get off and not haven't this linked to him at all.
Right.
So in March 2003, the authorities were worried that they wouldn't find him before the statute of limitations prevented them from prosecuting someone if they found him later. So what they did was they made an arrest warrant kind of thing for John Doe, and with the crimes that had happened. So he had about, or that they could find, they had about 8 rapes that they were connected together at this time.
Wow, that's crazy.
And, right. And so they named him the Clearfield rapist. And they put this arrest warrant for John Doe explaining his crimes and then link it to the DNA profile. So if they end up finding him later, the statute of limitations does not apply because they have this active arrest warrant. They just have to plug his name into the John Doe, right?
Nice. I like that loophole.
Right.
When did they do that?
They did that in 2003.
Okay.
Yeah. So over the following 10 years, more cases would be linked with the DNA profile in Ogden, Layton, Wyoming, even like in this area, right? They wow. have multiple cases that are linked to this DNA profile. The MO stayed similar, but progressively got worse. The attacker would use strips of their clothing to blindfold and bind them. And he seemed calm, collected, and expressing little to no empathy.
That's disgusting.
I know. 2 decades later, in 2015, a TV show called Cold Justice reached out to investigators and offered to cover the story and also fund DNA testing so that they could use it in their program, right?
Yeah.
So they're like, hell yeah, let's take advantage of this, because right. otherwise we wouldn't be able to. I guess there's only so much of a budget that you can go towards cold cases that you have to kind of like prioritize it. And sometimes it can take years for the DNA lab to even like look at it. So
wow.
because everything else is prioritized over it, right? If it's a cold case, they're like, oh, like we don't need to do this right now.
That's sad. I always thought that like technology was so advanced that like they just run it through a computer, like a Scantron, you know, just like
I know.
They could tell you who it is.
I know.
It's like rah, beep.
I know. And it like I feel like TV shows make it look like it goes so fast, so it's like, you know, you expect results quickly, but like, yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes into it, because they have to take the blood and then create a profile from the blood, and then they have to go and match it through all these databases, and like, I don't know, it apparently it takes longer than maybe we think it does, but
seems like a job that a robot can fix.
The Clearfield Police Department created a task force to find the Clearfield rapist, pulling all the stories and details of other victims from other areas and trying to pinpoint where this guy was and maybe who he is.
Yeah.
So not just the attacks that happened in Clearfield, but also Wyoming, in Ogden, Layton, Riversdale, all the areas. And the task force was able to identify 11 cases with 14 total victims that had the same DNA linked to it.
Whoa.
Yeah. So based on all the clues and evidence that they had gathered amongst all the cases, they believed the serial rapist was probably living in the Salt Lake area or Davis County. He must have had a home there or traveled there often. So he could be someone who just came in and left. And it was like a crime that he did outside of his home, like outside of his home area, or he lived here.
Like a business trip thing.
Yeah, right. In 2015 is when the Cold Justice episode was released, and about the Clearfield rapist, and investigators were hoping that someone would see this episode and have information that they had forgotten about or didn't know who to contact, or jogged someone's memory, whatever. But after the episode aired, investigators received hundreds of tips that they had to sift through, people accusing their brothers, dads, uncles, neighbors, acquaintances. But out of all of those tips, none of them led to viable leads.
Wow.
Police were now able to use DNA technology that built a picture of what a person might look like based on their genetic profile. So it basically kind of like did a sketch of what they might look like.
Isn't it kind of like a 23andMe advanced, like, where it's like, okay, like they have like this percent Swedish, this percent German. So like with those features, they'll probably look like this.
Yeah, but it doesn't, at this point, they didn't use any technology or any testing that told them like their family line. It was just their traits. So, yeah. But based on that, they were actually able to get a little hint of who might have, oh, let's see. Okay, so they were able to get pictures or sketches of what this person might look like at 20 years old, 30 years old, and so on. Which wasn't a whole lot to go on, because it's still just a picture of somebody that could or could not be, you know, whatever. So, using genealogical testing against the DNA, the databases were able to, the databases available to Parabon Nanolabs, they were able to give detectives a last name that matched the DNA. So they didn't find a specific person, but they were able to link it to like a family line with the last name Burns.
Wow.
So investigators looked at any of the tips, suspect list, searching for anyone with the last name Burns, and they did end up finding one person on their list, and they served a search warrant and ended up not being a match to their DNA. So they're like, oh, shoot. But it did kind of get the ball rolling of like, okay, is there any other kind of testing we can do, right?
Right.
What was weird is that he did look like the picture that, like, the sketch. Like, he looked like it, but the DNA didn't.
That's eerie.
I know.
That's eerie. Well, maybe, like, it's a brother or a cousin.
Well, the profiles weren't close enough for them to find that yet. So, investigators also contacted Dr. Barbara Ray Venter. She's a genetic genealogist and biologist who helped catch the Golden State Killer through DNA.
Okay.
They provided her with a DNA profile and a DNA sample from one of the victim's cases. She developed a profile of this DNA that she could use to run through her own system of genealogical testing stuff, like the 23andMe stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And so this is kind of nice because instead of police having to wait for DNA to be entered into the CODIS system, if this person so happens to have their DNA collected, they can now possibly find a familial match with their DNA through a commercial system.
Right. So,
in 2018, Dr. Venter contacted investigators saying she found a man she believed was the attacker's second cousin, and he lived in Ohio. So, through more investigation, they found the mother of the cousin. So, the cousin is who they matched. His mom was adopted. And so, they were able to find the records of this mom's, like, biological parents, and their last name was Burns.
I know. What?
So, using the family tree of the Burns family, they found a likely suspect and covertly obtained his DNA. They tested that man's DNA, and he was not a match either. But the results showed that he has a half sibling, or he was a half sibling to the attacker. So
my gosh, they're like inching closer and closer.
I know. They interviewed the man they collected the DNA from, and he said he has a half-brother named Mark Douglas Burns. Mark Burns had been convicted of rape in North Carolina in 1974 and currently lived in Ogden, Utah.
Oh my gosh, that's him.
Yeah. They began looking into Mark Douglas Burns and found that while he was in the military and stationed in North Carolina in the 1970s, he raped an 18-year-old girl in a McDonald's bathroom. He was convicted and sentenced to death by gas chamber.
Whoa.
But he was only in prison for 1 year when the North Carolina law changed where inmates could not be put to death for sexual assault crimes. So, his sentence changed from death sentence, right, to 12 to 15 years. He was released after 12 to 13 years in prison. He That's was sentenced insane. To death and was released after 12. Like, That's why not insane. Get life in prison at that point, yeah. right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was arrested a couple times after that, after he was released, for being a peeping Tom, but was never caught with anything more serious than just a peeping Tom. And he never got, like, so he was on parole, but they never revoked his parole because of that. And I'm like, wouldn't you see that he's, like, on his way to commit that crime again?
Yeah. But
he was never, like, booked back into jail for it. I think it's messed up. So, Mark Burns, let's see, he relocated to Utah in 1990, and the first rape was in 1991. And he was working as a truck driver, working out of Brigham City and living in Ogden.
Wow.
So investigators were able to collect DNA from his trash and run it to test his DNA, right?
Yeah.
September 20th, 2019, they got results back from the DNA lab, and Mark Douglas Burns was a match to the Clearfield rapist profile. And then 5 days later, he was arrested at his home in Ogden, Utah.
Yep.
Investigators spoke to his neighbors trying to get an idea of what kind of guy he was, and he genuinely seemed like he had a really good relationship with most of his neighbors and didn't seem to be a threat by any means. Like, none of them would have suspected. He was just kind of like a regular old guy, just
That's living crazy. His life.
Yeah.
Because I imagine, like, from the sketch that you showed me and based off of his track record, I imagine just, like, this creepy, yucky, give you the heebie-jeebies kind of guy, you know? Like, yeah. Somebody that, like, if you looked at them, you would think, oh, yeah, they're up to no good. You know, like, right. Oh, yeah, they probably watch way too much porn or something, you know?
Right.
And, like, something. But if they're saying, like, oh, no, he's just normal and we really like this guy, it's like, really?
Like, no
way. Like, you guys have a really bad judge of character, or he hides it really well, which is also terrifying.
Yeah, so let me show you a picture of him next to the sketch.
Oh, yeah, I want to see. Oh my gosh, he's so gross. I hate him. Ooh, his eyes.
I know, right?
Like, there's just something about the sketch and his actual eyes. Like, those are the eyes of somebody who has no soul.
Right. And they were like, he has no remorse. None. Anyway, okay. So once investigators took him into questioning, he was asked if he was ever charged with sexual assault. And he was just like, yeah, I was in North Carolina. You know, like, he was very forthright with information.
Okay.
And then he said, is that what this is about? Is this a rape charge? And the detective said yes. They began to explain that his DNA matched from the attacks. He's like, okay, we have these rape cases and your DNA is linked to those. And at this point, he asks for a lawyer.
Really?
Uh-huh. And so then they couldn't ask him any more questions, right? His lawyer told him and stressed that he did not talk to the media or talk to anybody else, right? Because he's being charged for 17 counts of sexual assault and rape. And on the date of his trial, his lawyer asked if he could only be charged, like, asked for a deal, you know, and said, okay, we'll take 5 charges if out of the 17. And the prosecutors were like, hell no. Like, we're not doing that. Obviously, why would they do that? They have DNA linked to all of them.
Right.
That's so stupid. And so the trial, it's a preliminary trial to see if they're going to have a trial, basically. It's like where they do their plea, right?
Right.
And so as the preliminary trial began, Mark Douglas needed to enter his plea, and he calmly pled guilty to all charges.
All 17?
All 17.
Good.
Yeah. So not only does he say or plead guilty to 17 counts of sexual assault and rape, but he also adds on admission that he committed 3 murders as well that weren't even involved in what was going on. One in Utah, one in Arizona, and one in Oregon.
Wow.
Yeah. And against his defense attorney's advice, Burns offers to do an exclusive interview with Fox 13 News, where he admits to his crimes. I don't know if you want to see that.
Sure. Okay. But it really sounds like he's just like leaning into the recognition and like the, oh, look what I did. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what the Fox 13 guy said. He's like, yeah, I am pretty sure he just wanted the attention. He wanted to be famous for his crimes. He like, yeah, he just wanted them to think he was cool. Which I'm like, which is funny because I haven't even heard of him. So, okay. This ad is about zoo poo for healthy poops. Okay.
Hey, good afternoon, Mark. How are you doing? You hear me?
I'm well, Adam. Yourself? All right. Well, let's see where this goes then.
These interviews you're about to see took place in February 2020. We're only releasing this series now because his confessions to Fox 13 were used as part of an ongoing investigation into new crimes that he had never been linked to before.
I definitely regret everything that I've done. I mean, those people did absolutely nothing to me. They did not deserve what I did to them. If I could take it back, I certainly would. But I can't. Possibly being executed for those murders is the only sense of justice that I can give them.
You were on death row in the past. Do you want to be on death row?
I would rather be executed than spend the rest of my life in prison.
So give him the opposite.
All three of the homicides were totally by accident. None of them were planned. The one in Wyoming that they're going to talk about was actually the only female victim. And that one was just a total mistake. My bad, total. She had nothing to do with it. I mean, she did nothing wrong. Totally my bad. It was just a situation that just went to instantly. And I chose the wrong way to handle it.
You object to being called a serial killer?
I don't know. I mean, if that's what it is, then that's what it is. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't, if that's what I am, then that's what I am.
The Clearfield rapist will never have to face his murder victims, but earlier this year he said it was uncomfortable to face the women he raped.
I would ask the court, show me no mercy.
He robbed me of my virginity, safety, and sleep. Since that traumatic night, I have never again slept through the night, ever. The bravest thing I ever did was continuing my life when I wanted to die. He gave me a life sentence, but he himself was free to live his life.
How did you pick your victims?
I didn't pick them, just whoever left the door unlocked.
Why?
I don't know. I had a compulsion that was irresistible. On the one hand, it was a hunger that was unquenchable, unsatisfiable. But then on the other hand, it fed me. It made me feel complete. You know, I never experienced love. I don't know, maybe these crimes were just some way of me actually being able to present my whole entire complete self as a human being to another person, whether they wanted it or not. Obviously, I'd rather be free than spend the rest of my life in prison. But on the other hand, I've had a great weight lifted off of me because of this now. It gave me the opportunity to provide some closure to my victims. They certainly deserve it.
Do you know how many women you have raped?
I've got a pretty good idea. My memory's not as good as it used to be, but I'm not going to get into that now.
Burns said he has not committed a crime since 2002, when his desire to fulfill his sick need started to fade.
My brain does not function normally. I don't know if it's a chemical imbalance. Maybe I've got an extra Y chromosome. Maybe it's just a loose wire. Up until recently, I've never experienced the feeling of guilt. I do feel regret. I do feel remorse. I do feel sorrow. These are feelings I've never experienced before. I have become what I think is a responsible citizen. I'm a good neighbor. I'm a good friend. I'm a good employee. I think I'm basically a decent human being if it wasn't for the fact that I was also a monster.
You know, I've never heard that before where they say, like, you know, I didn't used to feel anything, but now I do.
Yeah, I think it was all an act because he wanted attention. I think that he literally is not capable of feeling remorse or guilt. I think like the emotion you saw when he was talking to the judge was because he was realizing that he wasn't going to be getting out of prison no matter what he did. So I kind of feel like where he asked for, I want to be put to death because that's the only justice I can see or whatever. Personally, I kind of feel like they should just give him life because he has to suffer. Like, I think he deserves to suffer.
Exactly. It sounds like he's trying to be like, yep, this is everything I did. Just put me to death already. You know, it's like, how about you go sit in that corner and think about what you did until the day you die?
Yeah. Right. Right. So at sentencing, the victims were allowed to speak to the judge, which you kind of heard. Right. Burns, let's see, the 11-year-old victim that we talked at the very beginning, she was not allowed to say her piece in sentencing because hers statute of limitations qualified for hers because it was in 92. And so it was like 20 years had passed or something. So,
but I thought they found that loophole where it was like,
that was for the ones in 2000. I don't think they didn't know about her until later after that that arrest warrant was created. So
I see.
I think that she wasn't involved in that arrest warrant until later. Like, they didn't know about her case until later when they did the task force.
Okay, I see.
So Nicole, the 11-year-old girl, she was quite ready to face him and say her piece, and she never got to say it. But basically what she was saying that she was going to say was that, like, I'm stronger than you. And, you know, like, you know, we never thought we would catch you, but here we are. And, you know, yeah. So she said that she's kind of trying to move on with her life. Like, she was very involved with, like, once they caught him, she was going to every trial, every whatever. But once they sentenced him, she hasn't focused on it once. So she's trying to heal.
Good.
As best she can, you know. Right. Mark Douglas Burns was sentenced to 16 years to life on 14 counts and 6 to life on the other 3 counts. And they're to be served consecutively. So he will not be getting out. He'll spend his life in prison, and he did not get the death penalty.
Wow.
So DNA testing, like we were talking about, is expensive for police departments to have run, especially on cold cases. So DNA labs are bogged down, so they have to prioritize what gets tested and when. Sometimes it can take years for DNA results to be returned to investigators, which is obviously a disservice to victims, no matter how, like, warm or cold the cases are. So obviously we need more DNA labs, because the ones that we in Utah, I believe most of ours are sent to a lab in Wyoming. So we need more labs, we need more funding to do the testing, but thank God for genealogical DNA testing.
Yeah.
And the databases that we're able to run against for certain things, because they caught this guy and they caught the Golden State Killer, which would have never been caught without it. Like, there literally would have been no way to catch them. It would have been cold forever if not for that database to be used. So,
well, and I keep thinking about, like, imagine the job of being like a forensic genealogist, right? You know, like, not so just cool. The DNA, but you have to go and, like, find the records of who birthed who, you know, even if they're adopted, like, you have to find those records.
Yeah,
like FBI official.
Yeah, I feel like they should. That should be a core part of forensics. Like, I really think so.
That'd be crazy.
But anyway, that's my story. It was awesome and terrible, but that's
what it was.
But it makes me a little more hyper aware because this stuff does happen still. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I don't think it happens as much because we have most people have security cameras. Most mm-hmm. people are locking their doors now. We're not as trusting.
Yeah.
Like, he literally went around a neighborhood and just wiggled doors until one was unlocked. Like, he was just a criminal of opportunity, and like,
that's insane.
I would hate to be one of the people who accidentally left my door unlocked. So right. We're hyper vigilant and making sure that our doors are locked. But now I'm like, crap, are my windows all locked? Because I don't know if I've like opened it and then just shut it and didn't think about it. Because you know that can be a problem. So now I'm all freaked out. Well,
remember, was it Rosetopia?
Mm-hmm.
Forgot exactly how what her name was.
Yeah.
Rosetopia, yeah. I mean, she was kidnapped through a window, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So
it can happen. So lock your doors. Lock your windows.
Elizabeth Smart was taken through a window.
Yep. Yeah. It's scary. But it makes me like super nervous that I don't have a security camera right now. Oh, yeah. I'm like, Josh, we got to get going on that because we have it. We just haven't installed it. So maybe that's what do this weekend because now I'm all freaked out. But like, for can sure. you imagine the terror and the damage that does to a family and to a girl and to, you know, like, oh my gosh, I can't even imagine the turmoil and like how hard it would be to get over that. Not even, I mean, they probably never get over it, but to just try to heal.
Like to move on from it.
Yeah, how could you do that? Especially that entire family that witnessed that together. I mean,
right.
That would be such a traumatic experience. But
a lot of ways.
But like, I don't know if it would bring you closer or like kind of make it hard to look at each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like to bond.
Yeah.
In some ways.
Yeah. Oh, it makes me so sad. But he's caught and. I mean, he's never getting out. I feel like justice wasn't served in the first place with the North Carolina situation. They let him out way too early. I don't know how you can let someone go if they've raped someone, because I feel like obviously they're going to have that urge to do it again. So I'm like, why would you ever let them out?
Right.
You can't heal from that. Like, you can't be like cured of being a freaking, you know?
Yeah. I feel like you're just a walking hazard.
Right. Cause like, I don't know. I feel like they're going to do it again. Cause that's how they feel they need to do it.
Is this why it happened in the first place?
Right. Anyway.
Ugh. Well, you did a good job. You did a good job telling the story, even though that was an awful story.
Yeah, definitely look into what was that show called? It was fascinating. Bloodline.
On Peacock.
Bloodline Detectives. I tried to find the Cold Justice episode, but it was said it was on Amazon Prime, but it said it was unlisted or unavailable at the time, so I couldn't watch it. But there was also an episode on that, but I didn't get to watch that one. So,
Gotcha. Anyway.
Ugh.
Good job. Good job.
Thanks,
good job.
Thanks. 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 Thanks.
Okay, give me a sec. Gotta pull up the doc. Wow. Hold on.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was gonna say in the intro because I was like, I need to talk about this just because I feel like it makes me seem more interesting.
What about what?
I've all of a sudden become kind of a reader.
You talked about that before.
Well, but I was listening to audiobooks, but it's been like actually reading a book, physical book.
Wow.
Yeah. So I read this book called My Sister's Grave, and it's about this woman grows up to be a detective because her sister went missing as a kid, And like she blames herself. They convicted a guy but didn't have like hardcore evidence. They never found her body, but then they find her body 20 years later.
Ooh.
And more information comes about, and she tries to solve it even though the whole town believes it's been solved. And she kind of steps on toes of like the sheriff who she grew up knowing, and is like trying to solve it because she thinks he did it wrong. And like, it's really good. Like, it
kind of... Is it Crooked Cops, Crooked Detectives? I think that's where it's going.
Well, I've already finished the one because it's a series of 10, but it's one of those where it's like you don't have to read the series to get the full story. So each book has the same characters, but it's different stories. Like, it's that they're moving on to a different situation type of thing.
Right.
And because she's a detective, it's like the next book is about a different case she works on type of thing.
Okay.
But the first book is about her working on her sister's case. And it definitely goes in the direction of Crooked Cops, but it ends so crazy to me. It was just crazy. But yeah, anyway, it's good. And it was like a crime thriller type thing. So I was like, I'm into this. And it's not like true crime where it's like, this is a real person that I'm like sitting here listening about. But okay. Anyway, yeah.
Good for you. Your brain just wanting a little adventure.
Yeah, it's been interesting. And now I'm reading one called A Flicker in the Dark, which is also kind of a crime mystery thriller thing. Interesting. I don't know. I'm just like, every 30, like, I can read for 30 minutes while I'm chilling outside on my swing. And I'm like, 30 minutes a day. And I feel like I'm like watching a movie in slow motion type thing where I'm like, I can kind of guess where it's going. And then I end up not being right.
Right.
So, yeah. That's
so fun.
I know. I liked it. Anyway.
Good for you.
That's what I'm doing.
You're becoming more articulate at the same time. That's what they say.
If you read.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
You can be the one to judge, because I feel like you hear me talk more than anybody else.
Well, you know, you're reading your notes pretty good. You didn't like stutter as bad as you usually do.
My speech impediment is being healed by reading.
I just mean like you were able to get through it without being like, ugh. You know, like, yeah. I feel like you were good at like getting, yeah, you did good.
Thanks. I kind of think it's because I did most of my notes today, so they were fresh on the mind.
Maybe that's it. Yeah. Not that you're reading books, it's just that you.
Not that I'm smart.
You memorized it.
Basically, yeah.
Right. You're like, wow. I didn't actually learn the answers. I just memorized the questions.
Yeah. Oh, wow. You sound like you know how to talk. It's because I'm reading. No.
No. It's a script.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you ready for my story?
I am ready.
Okay, everybody. This is a short story, just like the last one.
That's okay.
So I hope you like these little blips.
Yeah, I'm interested.
This is one that's been on my list for a very long time. And in fact, when I opened up like my little Word document, like that's in my little folder in my like drive for episode 45, apparently I was going to do this for the Christmas episode.
Oh, really?
Because it said like, Merry Christmas. This is episode, I think it was like 35 or something. And I was like, oh, well,
now it's 45. Episodes later.
Exactly.
Merry Christmas. Just kidding.
Wait, when does this come out?
May.
Is this coming out this Sunday? In May 28th? Yeah. Okay.
Merry Christmas.
Oh, that's so soon.
May. Okay. Merry.
Do you want to guess where this story is?
Let's see. It's
like what type of place we're going to?
If you were going to do a fun game. For a Christmas episode.
Has nothing to do with Christmas.
Oh. I was like, I'm gonna say Wait, are you asking where or what type?
Like what type of location?
What type of location? I'm gonna say it's a farm.
A farm? And where do you think the farm is?
In northern Utah.
Okay, well, opposite. Not really. Okay, we're going to a cemetery.
Oh.
In Spanish Fork.
That's Utah County. That's like, yeah. that's still mid-north.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, it's not really southern Utah, it's just south of where both you and I are.
It's southern Utah County.
Yeah, the exact address of Spanish Fork Cemetery is 420 East, 400 North, Spanish Fork, Utah.
What do they grow there?
Dead people.
Or marijuana.
Marijuana.
I bet there is.
Maybe. Has to be. It's destined. Okay, well.
Anyway, stupid comment for my part. Okay, go ahead.
Let me tell you about it.
Okay.
So, this cemetery has a famous legend known as the Weeping Lady of Spanish Fork Cemetery. Have you heard?
No, I haven't heard.
I got a lot of my information from a YouTube channel that I've used in the past. You may have heard of it, called The Paranormal Polynesian. Super funny. Love him. I think he did like the Kearns one and Provo High School.
Didn't he do the Sarah?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's really funny. I really like his channel. So shout out to him. Go check out that channel. Okay. Anyway. Spanish Fork Cemetery, another beautiful cemetery filled with mature trees and breathtaking views of the mountains from all around. Why is it creepy? Well, the legend of the Weeping Lady. So let me show you a picture of the headstone that we're talking about. Okay, hold on. Save as. We're going to put it into the desktop. Hold on.
And now you're being a girl puppy. Where did that sucker go a minute ago, huh?
Facebook. All good.
Say, look, I'm being a good boy.
Oh, ow, he bit, a cute little teddy bear.
Bit my face just now. No, okay, I tried to love on you.
And I'm going to post this on our Instagram.
Sit. Oh, okay. Oh, sad.
Yeah, so this is a granite monument that was sculpted by a man named Horace Faraday. And
That's a sad name. I know.
It sounds like you're going, you know, like
Horace. Like you're coughing up a
Horace.
Horace. Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah.
As we're being rude to somebody. Sorry.
Anyway. His name is Horace Faraday. Mm-hmm. And he has a really sad past since birth. Three of his siblings died at a very young age. And the day before he was born, his father committed suicide.
Oh, that is so sad. And his
mom died a year later.
Oh,
I'm not
no.
sure how or why she died, but so Horace was taken in by his grandmother to be raised, and that monument was, you know, so then he ended up in Utah because he actually grew up, sorry, I forgot to look up where he grew up, but not in Utah, but then he made his way into Utah and married his wife, and after she died from an infectious tumor, which a lot of people believe could have been ovarian cancer. After she died in 1929, let me tell you a little bit about his wife.
Okay.
So before she died, her name was Laura Daniels, and she was a talented pianist.
who was well known in the community. Laura and Horace, or Horace, met and were married pretty young. Laura was 18 and Horace was 21 when they got married.
Mm-hmm.
They had three kids, and by the time their youngest was 5 years old, Laura passed away. And story goes that the children didn't handle her death very well, and they grieved very deeply for years.
Yeah.
Horace was known to not show his emotion openly to people, but it was known that he was heard sobbing very loudly at night.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah, like neighbors could hear him crying.
Well, I feel like it's, especially at the time, men showing emotion was weak.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right. Almost still kind of is that way. I mean, I think yeah. It's getting better, but men showing emotion was seen as weak. And I'm sure he probably felt like he had to be strong for his kids. And the right. Only time he could show emotion is when he's alone.
Mm-hmm. At night.
Yeah. Which, that's, I mean,
so sad.
That breaks my heart for him.
Right. Horace wrote a poem that many believe was kind of a spin-off of a poem from a 19th century poet, Robert Richardson. And that poem was also engraved onto the headstone.
Okay.
It reads, "Warm summer sunshine, kindly here. Gently breeze, blow softly here. Mother Earth, above lie light, good night, sweetheart, good night."
Aw.
Super sweet.
Yeah.
After her death, Horace decided to pack up and move the family to Idaho, hoping it would help heal their broken hearts. But Horace died many years later in 1972 and was buried alongside his wife, Laura.
Hmm.
The monument is of a woman at her knees crying with her face in her hands as if she is just sobbing. Legend goes that the woman actually cries. Evidence of this comes from the clear streaks of calcium deposits, aka water stains, on the stone that are in line to where tears would fall if the woman was actually crying.
Wow.
People have claimed that after the sun goes down, you can hear what sounds like a woman crying near the headstone. Visitors have said that after it rains, the statue's tear stains will fill with water and take longer to dry.
Huh.
So not only is there like visible tear stains, but like even if it gets wet, like it doesn't dry as quickly as the other surface around it.
That's super interesting.
The Spanish Fork Cemetery is also rumored to have a woman in white, which some people kind of tie into the legend of it possibly being the weeping woman or Laura.
Oh, okay.
Could be somebody else. We don't know. There's also a headless jogger that's rumored to run around the cemetery. Yeah. I know. And I'm like, there has to be a story behind that, but I couldn't find anything. It's just kind of like a local legend, I guess.
It's like to scare everyone away from running. Like,
right. Or visiting the cemetery at night.
Right. Yeah.
Visitors of the cemetery have said that they will sometimes feel warm and cold spots randomly throughout the cemetery. And I saw some comments in the Utah Haunted History Facebook page saying that some people's dogs won't walk into the cemetery, or they act strangely if they walk around the cemetery.
Huh.
So, animals.
Animals knows. Animals know what's up.
You're so articulate, April.
Yeah, remember I read.
Yeah. Good job. And anyway, that's the end of my story.
I do kind of like want, I think it'd be interesting, and I don't know if anyone does this, but to bring animals, I don't know, maybe this is considered like not abuse, but what's the word? I don't know. But like to bring an animal or a dog to like investigation and see how they react to things, because like I feel like dogs can sense things, like you know, we've seen videos of them like barking at a corner or something, like something's there. I would be interested to see.
Ghost Hunters does that. They have a dog on their crew.
They do?
Mm-hmm. It's a new thing. It's the you know how Ghost Hunters just barely kicked back up?
Yeah.
But one of them isn't there anymore.
Yeah.
Well, they have a dog. It's like they basically replaced the guy with the dog.
That's funny.
But Tango is still there.
Oh, really? I like Tango.
Me too. The other guy is still there too. I can't remember his name though.
It's like this dog can do basically what you were doing. So
yeah, he can sniff out ghosts better than you can. So.
Yeah. So you're useless and goodbye.
Right. Right.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, that's crazy. I think like cemeteries, and we talked about this with Whitney a little bit, but I haven't been in a cemetery at night, so I don't really know about the eerie feelings. But during the day, whenever I'm at a cemetery, I don't feel scared of anything. Like it just feels like a peaceful place more than anything.
Was it Whitney who said that, like, if a cemetery doesn't have any wildlife in it, then it has bad juju? Was that her?
I don't think it was her. I don't remember her saying that.
Okay, then I think I heard that since then. I'm just like, oh, I need to tell somebody.
Someone who talks about cemeteries, I need to tell us.
Yeah, update to our cemetery knowledge is that I heard that if, like, you're going by a cemetery and you notice there's, like, no birds, no squirrels, no deer, no nothing, no dogs, that means that cemetery has probably some bad juju. Bad vibes.
That's good to know.
Yeah, I'm like, birds would know.
Would they? Because crows are bad, aren't they?
I don't know.
I mean, aren't crows like a sign of like bad juju though? I mean, isn't that the bird that's like creepy?
I mean, it's creepy, but it doesn't mean it's bad. You can't judge a book by its cover, April.
But, like, I feel like they're, like, black cats. Like, crows are kind of similar in that way, where it's like, oh, it's bad luck, or it's bad
vibes. Yeah, but, like, I think that if a cemetery had bad vibes, even a black cat wouldn't go in it, right?
I don't know. Have you seen Hocus Pocus? Because
Binks goes. But it wasn't bad. I know, but what's his name? Willie?
Billy.
He's not bad. He's a nice guy.
Well, he was on the bad side until the end. He switched spots. Yeah.
He was just mad.
But he was like on like doing their bidding, wasn't he? Kinda?
I don't remember.
Because I don't know.
Well, I think was it he like kind of like at their will? Like he had to or else or something.
I don't know.
I don't remember either. But listen. You see no life, you don't go there, okay?
Okay, deal. Well, okay.
Imagine, like, walking into a party and being like, I see it, no life in here. I can't even. I gotta go.
There's bad vibes.
If you're wanting tips of how not to get invited to things, here's what to say at the next get-together.
I mean,
take it from me.
Yeah, we know how to not get invited to things. Yeah, I've been trying to be friends with like a school mom. She knows who she is.
Does she listen?
I think she started to, but like I've just like feel so weird just because I've spent most of the year avoiding all other people because I feel like they're all judging me.
All but other like, life forms.
Yeah, they're all judging me and I'm not cool enough to be one of the moms, you know?
Yeah.
So then like because Shelby, my friend, has forced me into a friendship with another mom. It's going pretty well.
good.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, there are moms that are actually normal. This is super interesting. How come I had never seen you before?
Well, yeah. And you got like your nails done one time, didn't you?
Yeah. She's a nail person. And so I go get my nails done. So I basically am paying for a friendship.
You're like, how about you do my nails while we sit and talk?
Yeah. It's like, we're friends, right?
Right? She's like, yeah, thanks for your money.
Okay, $30.
Right. Oh, that's funny.
Anyways. And
you get your lashes done by a friend too, don't you?
She's a this might be weird to say, but She does my lashes, but I don't think she'd consider me a friend. She's very patient and nice to me, but like I don't think that she like would want to be around me on purpose.
She just wants you to feel comfortable while she's around your eyeballs.
Yeah, and
that you keep coming back.
Well, one of the first, because it's really easy to talk to someone when you're laying down on a table and your eyes are closed. And so you don't have to like make eye contact and like see the face expressions they make when you're talking. So one of the first things we talked about was how weird I think bones are and like that there's a skeleton in my body and I feel really uncomfortable with it. And she's like, huh. So like that was like a year ago. But then now when I was telling her about becoming friends with this other mom, she's like, maybe the first thing you say to her isn't about how weird you think bones are. I was like, oh, was that a bad move? And she's
was
like,
that a lasting impression?
Yeah. And she's like, no, it was funny. It like broke the ice, but like, you know, and I'm like, it's okay. You can say it. It was funny.
Oh but, my gosh. That's awesome.
I'm just like, don't know how to make friends is all. I'm just kind of like, if you can't deal with my weird like topics, then like maybe we aren't vibing, you know.
yeah I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I'm not good at making friends either,
but you've had some luck recently. Maybe
I mean, yeah, like I like these new coworkers I've got, which one of them might listen. She likes true crime and I told her about the pod, so hi if you're listening. If not, that's okay.
You all hear this anyway.
Yeah. But no, I don't know how to make friends either. And it's so like, it's so like sad seeing it like unfold when you're like the new people come in, like everybody's like, oh my gosh, you know, like getting to know them and just like, I'm so like, I didn't even know half of the people's names until the new people came. Cause I'm just like, this is, and they're like, my name's Alyssa. And I'm like, yeah.
Like I totally knew that.
Yeah, I just forgot. Because, like, nobody talked to me ever, you know? But, like, once the new people came, then it was, like, a crowd of people were always around where I'm like, ugh. So I had a lot of social anxiety lately, but.
Yeah, I can totally feel your pain.
And then, yeah, like, the new people, I told them about my anxiety because I was so anxious about it that I was like, bleh.
You're like, I'm so anxious, and let me tell you all about it because I don't know if it'll make either of us feel better, but let's.
And I'm like sweating. I like big sweat pits every day. And I'm just like, I'm not normally like this, guys, I promise. anyway, so, but yeah, they want to be my friend. I just don't know how.
Well,
I don't, because they're like, let's hang out, and I'm just like, yeah, but it's like, what do you do, like when do you know when to leave,
like their house?
Yeah.
or like leave, yeah, a conversation.
Oh, I guess all of it too, like I don't know.
Anyway, thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Haunt and Cold, brought to you by Katie and
Les Schwab Tires. I don't know why I keep doing that. It just sounds like an infomercial, like, you know. Okay, anyway, brought
I'm
to
sure
you by.
I'm sure listen, when I talk a certain way, people listen.
Do they? They listened.
Yeah, did you listen really close? That was good.
I did. Okay, do it again so that I can say the right thing.
Okay. Thank you for listening to another episode of Haunt and Cold. Wait, no. Thank you for listening to episode 45, brought to you by Haunt and Cold.
No.
No? Why did I say that first time?
Like he said,
damn it.
Thank you for listening to episode 45 of Haunt and Cold podcast, brought to you by April Bennett and...
Oh, Katie Waring.
Thanks for coming.
Wow. Yeah.
All right.
Wait, join something. Hold on. Follow us on social media.
Mostly Instagram.
Okay, hold on. It's gone. Follow us on social media. TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, you name it. We got it.
Yeah.
Join our Patreon for exclusive content, free merch, bonus things. Did we ever do that bonus clip?
No. Will though. It'll okay, get there.
Okay. There's a funny one that April's gonna put up of last episode. It was just hilarious, but not Katie for everybody
just,
to listen
Katie
to.
Katie was just spiraling. It was fine.
It was. So
okay.
Thanks.
Thanks for coming. Okay.
Listen again.
Okay, bye.